Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I've a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful Pueblo, Colorado, on this last day of June 2009. We're very excited about our show today, folks, because our special guest is an exciting new filmmaker, Misha Zubrev, whose film, 18 and Out, has been selected for inclusion in NBC's The Screening Room. It's a provocative little movie with a big message about what could be a serious problem in the child welfare system. We're expecting to hear from Ruella Anderson, a distinguished child welfare expert. We hope that she could be joining us to add her expertise to the discussion, but she did have an emergency and has sent me her reactions to Misha's wonderful film. And then later, I'm hoping we'll all pitch in to name any movies that have inspired people to get involved in activities to help others. I call these movies that matter. But first, let's hear from the rest of our Movie Addict Headquarters gang. Happily, both Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw are here to help with the show, and Shelby, Nikki Starr's assistant. Hey, Nikki, because tomorrow is an important day for you, I want to wish you an early happy birthday. Do you have any special celebration plans?
I actually do, and you know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm bringing the chins to see Transformers.
Oh, so why am I not surprised about that?
I know.
But what a wonderful way to celebrate your birthday. I hope you have a great day tomorrow. But now I have to get down to business and ask you if everything is ready in the chat room.
Everything looks A-okay.
Great. And I want to thank our chatters for signing in. And everyone else who's listening, either live or to the archives, we really appreciate it. And Jazz, in preparing for today's show, have you been thinking about movies that motivated people to help others or to work on solving a particular social problem?
I have, but you know, the more I thought about it after you asked me, the tougher it gets, because people take so many different things from films, because film is such a personal experience. And I know that our guest will probably be able to speak to this very aptly, but the filmmaking process, you start out and you create something, this work of art, this work that means a lot to you. But like any art, when you put it out there for the public to consume, they don't always take away from it what you might have thought was the original goal. Everybody takes away from it what they want to take away from it. So it's a very personal thing.
I think you're absolutely right, Jazz. It's a very good point that you make. And for me, there's another thing to consider, because being a movie addict, I enjoy movies primarily as escape entertainment. But then once in a while, one comes along that really gets me thinking and wanting to do something about an issue related, which is why I'm so glad Misha is here today. His film both moved and shocked me. I mean, did both things at the same time, so I'm very eager to talk with him about it. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Misha.
Betty Jo, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Hi, Nikki. Hi, Jess.
It's great to have you here, and you were one of our first guests, so this is not a new experience for you, and we're very glad to have you back on the show. I think the best way to begin is with a few questions, Misha, about filmmaking in general and about 18 and Out. And then I'll share some information that Ruella sent to me about your film. But Before we'd start, I just have to give a little background information on you. Listeners, I need to tell you that Misha is one of the most passionate filmmakers that it's ever been my good fortune to know. He not only concentrates in one area, but listen to the many jobs he's taken on for film and TV projects. He's done work as a camera operator, a videographer, a lighting assistant, a producer, a production assistant, a cinematographer, an editor, a script supervisor, an actor, and, of course, a director. And he's been involved in various capacities on such movies and TV shows as Four Funny Families, that's where I first got to know about him, The Wisdom Tree, Loneliness, Annapolis, Shooter, and About Angels, etc. I don't know about you, Jazz, but this resume, I'm just in awe of everything that Misha has done. So why don't you get the ball going right now, Jazz?
Oh, absolutely. Before we get down to the specifics of the current project, Misha, in general, it's a tough row for people to hoe to get into this business, and anybody who's been involved can tell you it can be really hard. What got you interested in filmmaking originally? What motivated you to go in that direction?
Well, that's a great question. First, I just like to thank Betty Jo. Thank you so much for that wonderful, wonderful introduction. and it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm just amazed how long it's been. And so I'd like to begin with a simple thank you.
Well, you're very, very welcome. You deserved every bit of it. So, and you know we're expecting great things from you even after 18 and out, right?
Well, thank you. Well, hopefully, if all the right pieces fall into place and, everything goes as a lot of times things don't go as planned, but that can only turn out for the better. So we hope that things will continue moving as they're intended, by the higher forces. I think that what actually got me into film, it's a good question. I got into filmmaking about 8 years ago, and this was because of one of the films that you had mentioned, Betty Jo. The film was called Four Funny Families. And this was a wonderful project, which actually was started through my funny family. My mom, who's also a writer, and she went to the University of Pennsylvania. She wrote a dissertation about Chekhov, combining his four major plays and depicting them as vaudevilles. Because most playwrights, most directors see Chekhov as dramatical works. She saw it as vaudeville because Chekhov initially intended vaudevilles. So we took four of these. My mom, what she did was she took four major plays, with Siegel, and Kavanya, Three Sisters, and Cherry Orchard, and she combined those four plays into one. And her major dream was to make it into a film. And one thing led to another, and she said to myself and my father, listen, we have no money. All we can do is combine our forces together, because my father, Vadim Zubarov, he's also a composer, in addition to wearing many other hats in the family as well as at work. And I've never done it before, but I was good with a camera. And so we went out, we purchased a camera, and here you go. 2 years later, we made this wonderful feature film, which is called Four Funny Families.
Oh, I loved that. And don't be modest. You actually played one of the roles in that film, and I thought, well, when I saw that, I thought when I saw you that your future would be in acting. And so I was surprised that you branched out in all these other areas.
Well, there is a lot of crossover. A lot of people have worked on both sides of the cameras among the many guests that we've talked to. Misha, now that you've had some time behind the camera, that you've gotten into it, how has it been compared to your expectations? What were or some of the challenges you've run into that maybe you weren't expecting, or some of the real rewards?
That's interesting. I initially was very, very scared of lights. I was very scared of directing actors, and I just took it one step at a time. It was one challenge at a time. First, it was the camera. Once I got comfortable with the camera, I came to post-production, And eventually I did start doing continuity, film continuity, script supervising, and got certified as a script supervisor. And I did some features and a lot of shorts. And that kind of segued me to understand what a director does and make me be less aware, or rather be more aware of direction. And then I got into acting. I went to a talent agency, and they signed me up, and I actually did a couple of modeling jobs. I did some modeling tours, and that kind of made me feel comfortable more about how to work with actors, how to work with talent. And I think that's really the key, because everybody has their path, and everybody has a certain way of working around things. For me, it was really just touching up on the little things and finding the most challenging parts of the film, and really helping myself. Right now, I'm at a stage where I'm writing a lot, and writing was the last thing which I really wanted. My New Year's resolution was actually to write and direct my own project, and I've been very lucky. I'm there, and I'm continuing that path. It's been only 6 months since I've been writing, maybe 6 or 7 months.
And we started off talking a little bit about the creative process in general, but in terms of challenges, if you could expand on that a little bit. When you have to work with actors who tend to be extremely creative people and they get invested in the project, you've got your writers, you've got everybody else, but as the director, it really is your project, your vision. Have you run into situations where you kind of have to overcome some resistance from people who maybe start having their own vision of what the project should be?
Oh, yeah, that always happens. I was just thinking of an example. There was a film directed by Eli Kazan, and it was starring Marlon Brando. And there was a one scene where Marlon Brando, there was this one line he just couldn't really pronounce because he was in a cab, and somebody was pointing a gun at him, and Marlon Brando just couldn't say that line. So he went to the writer. He said, "This line needs a rewrite." And what Eli Kazan did, he simply told Marlon Brando, so instead of changing the lines, take the gun and lower the gun. And that was not part of the direction in the script. That was something that he just came up with on the spot. And once Brando did that, the scene just started to happen. He really engaged. It was so much unexpected for the other actor in the scene that it really made a really interesting beat in the movie. And so it's always just a lot of times my first job that I did as a director, I came prepared. I had a beat sheet with every single shift, and I created the scene. I created a conflict between each actor. I created the challenges, and I said that this person has to get this person's attention, and I really beat it out, and I really came technically prepared. But once I came on the set, and you see how the actors begin to adjust and how the scene begins to adjust, it's just a lot of improvising. I mean, that's really what that was probably the most important thing that I found, was improvising on the set is really the key thing, at least for me.
Well, you did such a great job on directing 18 and Out, and I wanted to ask you where the idea for that came from. I know you say on your website that it was based on true events. So could you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in doing that movie about aging out of foster care?
Absolutely. Well, this is actually a very interesting and a wonderful coincidence that absolutely changed my life. Obviously, because I'm talking to you about it right now, the story basically pitched to me by Leontine Anglin, who's a wonderful lady. She runs a nonprofit organization part-time as a volunteer. It's called Beyond Expectations. And we had met at a meeting. It was a community meeting at Mind TV, where different producers and different filmmakers and different storytellers got together, and they would just meet. And at this one meeting, we happened to talk, and one thing led to another, and Leontine told me what she does. And we had a series of conversations over 6 months. And the way it started, she had told me that the story is about teens who go through foster care systems, and that they age out of the system, meaning when they turn 18 years old, they leave the system. And I didn't understand what that means. What does it mean when you leave a system? Basically, that means that they, if there's no safe place to, for them to go, they end up homeless on the streets and many times incarcerated. And I just couldn't believe it. And the more I talked to Leontine and Velma, Velma Newsom, who also runs a nonprofit called Tatiana's Room, which is another wonderful organization, and we had met with together. We had met with other young adults who have gone through the foster care system. And after really learning more about it, I believed it even less. And the story really touched me. And after a series of about 6 months, we came up with a screenplay that we all agreed on was something we wanted to film. It was initially intended to be a 5-minute piece, but it evolved. And that's how, basically that's where I got the story from.
Wow, and what about those wonderful actors that you used in that movie? I watched it again this morning, and I was particularly impressed, well, of course, with all of them because they were so believable, and I think a lot of that has to do with the director. But Cameron, the boy that played Cameron was especially good. I mean, he just got, you know, right to the heart of you, and you just, you know, just felt so, so sympathetic for him. Mm.
That's actually very interesting. We got Cameron because Mike Lemon Casting. Mike Lemon, he's also a friend of mine. He has a casting agency in Philadelphia, and they do a lot of very big projects, a lot of features. And he was very open and very generous to help me find an individual who would fit that profile that I had given him. I sent Mike the script. He read the screenplay, and he gave me several suggestions. And we had a casting session, and Jesse, who played Cameron, he came into the room. And once he came in, Virgil, he came into this room, everybody, it was myself, it was Leontine, Velma, we were standing there, and we were watching it, and everything just stopped. Like, just when he came into the room, you just feel this moment, this energy, everything just stopped, and you feel like this person is it. And he sat there. And, you know, the film was basically done on beat, on emotional beat, on music. That's how Leontine and I initially intended it. And Leontine even suggested that would be a good way of doing it. And I completely agree with her because when you, it's your last day and you're getting kicked out and you don't know where you're going to go, where you will end up, there's really not much to say. And so this young gentleman, he came into our casting and we just knew. And when he said that one line, that the one character comes in, he says, "They're here for you downstairs." And then he repeats himself saying, "Hey, did you hear me?" And he says, "Yeah, yeah, I heard you." And the way that he said it, you could feel so much emotion there. It really, really changed that person. And, so that's how we came up with him. A lot of the other actors, his best friend, LJ, he was a first time actor. We found him through high school. Leontine, she had a connection with one of the local high schools, and he came to the casting. He never acted before, and I was very impressed. I was really impressed, and I have to say that initially I was very skeptical, but we had, you know, once I saw him on camera, it really, and how I saw him interacting with Cameron, with Jesse, it really made a big difference. And once you play back on the camera and you see how they both interact, it really played a huge difference. And I had a lot of first-time actors. Velma, who played the program director, who was very, very apathetic, she has never acted before, and
she was great.
Extremely natural. She was extremely natural on camera. She was fantastic, and I thought that you know, she was very, really nailed it. And the other actors, Jody, she played the sympathetic, the caseworker. And Josh, who was also an American actor, he won fourth place on that reality show that we did.
As if there weren't enough challenges you're already facing, you're dealing with subject matter here that could really be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. And if you could, just talk to us a little bit about the additional challenges maybe that you run into. What are your expectations for a film where you're not taking a formulaic sort of just happy-go-lucky, you know, love story or romantic comedy or something? I mean, you're dealing with some hard things here. Does that make the process more difficult for you?
It makes it more interesting. It makes it more involved and more engaging. when you, and the story does have love. The story does have, it has a lack of love. And that's what I've really connected, that's how I connected with the story, because a lot of teens, when they turn 18 years old, they don't realize that there's what it's like not having a family, not having a first smoke, not having a driver license, not having friends, not having a place to go to. And this is about family, to make people appreciate what they have, as well as, you know, as well as showing the reality of the situation.
Yeah. But, short films face their own challenges in post-production, though, in particular, not only tackling a difficult subject, but what are your expectations for this film going forward? Do you want to do something else with this project, or are you going to move on to something else?
Well, right now, I just came back from the Philadelphia Film Market, and basically, we want to, I want to try to include this show, or this rather, this this short film, with similar, bigger projects which deal with similar issues. For example, if I just connected with somebody who's doing another film, and they said they're interested in using this short as part of their bigger program. So whether it's a theatrical release or a DVD release or maybe a television program that has similar topics, we're always looking for anything that deals with distribution. It would be even greater if they would, you know, pay something. Nobody's paying anything right now, unfortunately. But if they would pay something for this project, obviously all the proceeds, they would go to Beyond Expectations, to their nonprofit. But the hope, one is to have concluded as part of bigger projects, which we're looking for. The other part of it is using this project to make other projects with the same issue dealing with foster care.
Absolutely. And post-production and distribution issues are a whole other school to learn from, aren't they, in filmmaking as opposed to the actual artwork of creating the film itself.
Yeah, this is probably a good place to read the reaction that Ruella Anderson, the distinguished social welfare expert, who is very, very sorry that she couldn't make the show today, but she did want me to share her thoughts with you about 18 and Out. And first of all, Misha, she wants to congratulate you on the film. She thought it was very, very, very well done. And it made her a little angry, I think, because she's had so many years of experience as a child welfare worker and an administrator. And she probably wouldn't have put up with, as an administrator, she probably wouldn't have put up with leaving Cameron, you know, kind of in the lurch like that. So let me just read word for word what she wrote. She says, "My experience is," now she's works in the Colorado system, and she said, my experience with our system is a little different. We have an independent living service for kids who reach 16 and are going to emancipate from foster care. The kids are enrolled in a special program and taught independent living skills such as shopping, managing a checkbook, and their money. They are encouraged to work and save toward emancipation expenses. Foster parents assist with this. Most of the kids find jobs and save their money. If they can't manage in school, alternative classes are arranged in a special school program, and all are encouraged to graduate or get their GED. Also, the kids who leave the system usually have lots more stuff to take with them than Cameron did. State rules mandate that they have minimal amounts of clothing, usually a week's supply of everything. And Ruella says, I have had kids emancipate with as much as $6,000 in savings, and many foster parents sign for driver's licenses and allow the kids to use the use of their car or help them purchase one if they can buy the insurance. And she says she doesn't know of any worker who would make a kid move on their birthday. So she was quite worried about that. So the situation, I guess, would depend on the youngster and the social worker that's in charge of the case. But Ruella said that she's very, very happy that you did raise the issue if this kind of thing is happening, and thinks that you're well on your way to maybe helping to solve a problem like this if it does exist in your area. So do those reactions make sense to you, Misha?
Yeah, you know, she's absolutely right, and I think the issue is very important, especially now. Rosie O'Donnell just made a film called America, which is on Lifetime, and dealing with the same issue with the foster system basically not working. And you know, when the system, when a team, the whole point of the foster care system, the way that I see it at least, the way that it's designed, is that when a teen turns 18 years old, regardless of how long they've been there, 2 years, 10 years in the system, when the teen turns 18 years old, the system has to be designed to give them two things. Number one, it has to provide them safe place to go to after they age out. Whether it's preferably, it has to be, they have to go to a foster parent, a safe home for them to go to. And number two, they need to be educated on what to do next. Right now, the Pew Foundation, they actually published an article saying that at this point, even though the number, amount of teens in the foster care system has decreased, on the flip side of that, the amount of teens who age out without having a safe place to go to has increased. And
wow,
that really goes a long way to telling you that something is wrong. You know, we're responsible for this because, this is the foster care system is funded, federally funded, and something has to be done. It's just impossible for me to believe that when this type of thing happens, somebody just comes in, gives them some money, gives them some minimal resources like medications or cell phones, whatever have you, and then say, off you go. And as a matter of fact, when we had our discussions with the young adults who've been through the system, they have told me some really crucial stories. They told me this is exactly what happened, you know, and that's why I still can't believe it to this day. And, you know, this is, I think that something needs to be done.
And you're
Betty Jo, I wanted to get into the discussion about the whole concept of tackling difficult subjects that actually do make change. When filmmakers make decisions about the direction they're going to go in, we're often influenced by what came before us. How did you arrive at that? Were there any films, any filmmakers that influenced you coming into this that just spoke to you, that said, you know, I want to tackle something like this that might be a little harder?
You know, the truth is that I just came from a very good family. My folks are great, and I was just very lucky. I guess we could say I was lucky, and also they were lucky. but I was very lucky to have such a wonderful family who would just be very committed. And I grew up in a household where we had morals, family values, we had love, and you know, that's really what influenced me to make films and make, you know, work on television projects, television shows like The Wisdom Tree, about things that really will promote positive messages, positive values. And obviously it deals with a lot of, it's not a very commercial area, but there's, you know, there's a lot of different filmmakers who've done projects, independent filmmakers who've done projects like this. And also, every single time that I watch the Oscars, and you see all these films that are nominated that won the awards, a lot of the times, I'd say maybe more than 50% of the time, these films, they do deal with social awareness. And
are there any that jump to mind for you that really might have influenced you, you know, among those?
Any films that
Yeah, films or filmmakers, yeah.
Well, actually, one of the filmmakers, she's really cool. I like her. Her name is Deepa Mehta. I don't know if you guys heard of her. She's done like a trilogy. She's really most famous for a trilogy. It's called, I think it's called Fire, Water, and Earth. And Water is really one of her like critically acclaimed films. It's in the Toronto International Film Festival, and I think it was made in 2005 or something. And she really knows how to package art and social awareness into one and make it entertaining. Like that's something that I really love to watch, and I just recently learned of her, and I want to watch. I'd like to see some of her other films, but those are the three prominent ones that I think are really cool. But for me personally, I think that I love filmmakers that are just, they use the form of art and to really raise social awareness. Also like that, I think I couldn't say, you know, Baz Luhrmann. He also always has these messages in his films. He uses a lot of artistic means to convey his messages. I think, you know, Stanley Kubrick, I think, is great. That's one of my definite favorite filmmakers. Fellini, Martin Scorsese, without a question. And also, I think Luc Besson, he's a fantastic filmmaker. And the reason why is because the more I watch his films, like Professional, like Fifth Element, all those films that he's made, they really have one element in common, which is closest to me. They always deal with a female actor who was either dropped or who is alone or who is an orphan or something. And he knows how to penetrate through that screen to the viewer and connect us to that character and really just fall in love with that character, fall in love with it. You know, just really feel like I want to know what it's like to live that life. And I want to know, I wish I could learn. And I wish I could really be in that world and just, you know, but he just really, he's really engaging with his projects. And I think he's fantastic. And also Barry Levinson, you know, he's one of my favorites as well. Great storyteller.
Well, you've made some good choices. And the lady who directed Water, that is a filmmaker from India.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? And could you spell her last name for our listeners?
Absolutely. Her last name is Mehta, spelled E-M as in Michael, E-H-T as in Tom, A. And her first name is D-E-E-P as in Paul, A. Deepa Mehta.
Well, thank you. I highly recommend listeners take a look at some of her films. And I was giving this question some thought ever since we decided to talk a little bit about these serious movies, movies that matter and that actually motivate viewers to want to do something about a problem or to help others. And I have only three movies that I could think about that had a personal connection with me in terms of changing the things that I was doing and you know, making me want to do something. And one was way back in 1965, there was a movie, it's a Sidney Pollack movie, The Slender Thread, that starred Sidney Poitier as a volunteer at a crisis line, actually a suicide line and suicide helpline. And he was just so dedicated and worked so hard to prevent this suicide. I worked with some people in the community here after seeing that movie, and we set up a teenage crisis line as a result of that. And then the second one was Pay It Forward, that 2000 film that was just so good, so very, very good, up till the end when you kind of got very discouraged at the end. But it was Kevin Spacey, Haley Joel Osment, and Helen Hunt, and the whole issue was an assignment was given to the seventh grader to come up with an idea that would change the world and then go out and get it started. And that's how what the kid decided to do was do favors for people that he didn't even know, and then they had to do the same for so many other people. And I thought that really did get a lot of people interested. In fact, I think there's a foundation set up by the publisher of the book that it was based, I mean the writer of the book that it was based on. And then I have to mention, as the third film, Lorenzo's Oil. That movie just absolutely got to me. And because of the hard work that the characters played by Susan Sarandon and Nick Nolte went through to try to find a treatment for their son, and this, of course, was based on a true story, and the foundation they set up to do research on it, the Myelin Project. I wanted to do something right away, and so I did donate all my author's royalties to the Myelin Project. So every once in a while, films like this come along, and like your 18 and Out, that made me want to tell people more about it and to get people involved. And I know you're trying to find organizations, aren't you, that will partner with you in getting the word out about the problem of aging out of the foster care program, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. We're trying to raise awareness, and right now I'd like to just, at this point, it's very, very on a smaller scale because we haven't really found the right distribution houses. But the best way, I think, to do it is through nonprofits and through agencies that deal with these matters. And if this film can be used for fundraising purposes to help show the investor to help show at a fundraiser event, basically, that the seriousness of this issue, I think it would be really. I think that's really right now the one of the focuses at this point.
That's a very, very good idea. You know, we only have 9 minutes left, and we haven't checked with the chat yet. So I'm going to call on Nikki and see if she could give us a report on how things are going in the chat. Are there any reactions or comments that you'd like to share with Misha? Nikki?
Sure. Well, we're having interesting conversation in the chat room that has just taken a neat turn about what makes a movie matter. And, you know, we've brought up movies all the way from documentaries to, you know, Minority Report and The Matrix and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and Grapes of Wrath, just different.
Wow.
It may not have been a movie that, like, had something to do with a specific charity, but a movie that made you think and want to change humanity, or maybe the way the future might turn out. It's just been a very interesting conversation.
Oh. Exactly, and there's other areas of society that may seem less urgent, maybe I would say, than what Misha's dealing with. But when you asked me the question, Betty Jo, you know, I deal mostly with, like, politics and with industry and the interaction of those. I thought of some films as well, such as like All the President's Men and Wall Street, and more recently, There Will Be Blood. And those are areas where filmmakers have made people start to think about how they view their government, how they view the powers of industry, and whether, you know, how much you'll sit still for, and how people do get involved and say, you know, there's only so much we'll stand for. So filmmakers can have a very big impact there as well.
Very good point you made, Jazz. And listen to the movies that have been suggested by everyone. And
aren't they great?
Oh, my gosh, Grapes of Wrath, All the President's Men, and There Will Be Blood.
Minority Report.
The Matrix.
The Matrix, yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you.
It was a really scary look at the future and how people deal with law enforcement and how much will you put up with, you know. So, yeah, but I don't think any of them hit as hard as what Mitch is dealing with.
Right.
Still, you know, they are societal issues, and I think they do matter.
I do, and I think that, like, where he tapped into the one area that is going to – where we can help in that specific area, which I think that Films That Matter can cover a bigger, you know, a broader scope than just that. It was just interesting to see how people went ahead and took it to this different level. I thought it was great. And I love that type of conversation, and I appreciate the filmmaking that makes people think like that. And also, too, we need the link to your site so that we can go – watch the movie. That was the last thing I wanted to say.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The link to my website is, it's my name spelled out, it's www.Misha, spelled M-I-S-H-A, Zubarov, spelled Z as in Zach, U-B-A-R as in Rick, E-V as in Victor, .com, that's MishaZubarov.com.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Nikki, and thank you, Chatters, for those great suggestions. I definitely want everyone to go to Misha's site because when you go there, you'll be able to see some of his work, and you'll be able to see the movie that we've been talking about today, 18 and Out, and he's made several other films too. So, Misha, do you want to mention some of the other films that you've directed or been associated with?
Yeah, please do.
Well, the one that I mentioned initially that got me started was Four Funny Families. I think that's a very that's my first one, and that's a feature which I worked on with my family. And we did a film called Loneliness. It's about an author who goes to a small town to buy a theater and turn it into a funeral home. And
that's Loneliness. Loneliness. I think they can see that on your site, can't they? The film Loneliness.
You can see Loneliness also on my website. There's some excerpts on my site for the film.
Oh, it's just a beautiful film, just gorgeous, yes. But it's, again, you said that it's a man that goes to a small town to buy a theater and turn it into a funeral parlor. Go on, I didn't mean to interrupt, but film got me excited too.
That's basically the gist of the film. It's done in a very avant-garde way where we use my father's music. We use my mom's poetry, and there's really no dialogue in that film. And it's almost like a ballet where it has three acts, and it's done through movement and music and basically almost dance like in a way. And the other short film we did is called About Angels, which is another wonderful film. It's based on my mom's book called About God, Angels, and Poetry. It has nothing to do with religion, but it's rather a poetic take on these, on really how everything evolved, and it's very philosophical. It has a lot of things to chew on, I think. And we made it. It's almost like a film ballet, but we call it Synthesis of Art, because again, it combines each individual art form, like such as music, dance, and choreography. But what's different, why we call it Synthesis of Art and not just a film ballet, is because each individual aspect of the film, music has its own character, and music drives. You know, without the music, it wouldn't be the same thing. The music is not just supplementing the entire piece, but it's a synergy. It creates a synergetic effect where the music has a voice of its own, and the music leads the film in a certain direction, and then the choreography, the dancing, has a character of its own. And the wonderful choreographer Alexei Borovik, who was the principal dancer of the Pennsylvania Ballet, he was also playing the role of God in the film, and he choreographed this piece. He gave us a lot of ideas, and so that's why we call it Synthesis of Art, because it hasn't been done in such a way where each individual art form has its own voice and drives the film. Basically carries its own weight. So
I hate to get too technical, but I'm always interested in that side of it. Are you interested primarily just in working only on film, or are you also working in digital?
No, it's a good question. I haven't done, aside from when I was in college, I have not shot a film or a movie. I have not shot a motion picture. I can't say film because it's not. I have not shot a motion picture on film. Everything we have filmed in the studio on for 18 and out, everything was filmed on digital and high definition, and
thought, and I was curious because that seems to be where the industry is going. Do you miss the day of the film?
I'm going to have to call time. I hate this. We're going to have you back on again so that we can continue the discussion and hear more about your wonderful work. And I just have to say, you come from such a talented, creative family, and I'm just in awe of the work that all three of you do, your mother and father and yourself.
I'll be checking that out.
Yeah, I'll be sure to do that. You won't be sorry. Misha, thanks so much for being such a great guest today. And all of us here wish you such success in your important projects. And this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with this show. And special thanks to Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw for everything they do to help with the show. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or participated in the chat. We really appreciate it. Please come back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time when you'll hear Jazz and I interview William Sanderson, one of Hollywood's most versatile character actors. You may not recognize his name, but his face is familiar and so is his voice. He's now appearing in HBO's True Blood, but he had a very important part in The New Heart Show, Blade Runner, Coal Miner's Daughter, The Client, and many, many other films and TV shows. Be sure to check out our reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. And on behalf of everyone at Movie Addict Headquarters, I wish you all a happy and safe 4th of July. Now, as usual, here's the very talented A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song we dedicate to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners, and today to Misha Zubarev for his wonderful filmmaking work.
Me and be true.